This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by HuntStand. HuntStand is the number one hunting app in the country, and at only $29.99, HuntStand offers a ton of functionality for hunters all over the country. Whether you own your own property or strictly hunt public, you can choose from over a dozen base maps, view property ownership information, 3D mapping, local weather, log your sightings and harvest, as well as use their trail cam management software, and print maps from your hunt areas. Download it today at the Apple App Store or Google Play. HuntStand. Upgrade your arsenal. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. Woo! What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Nine Finger Chronicles. I'll tell you what, man, I woke up this morning and I was feeling pretty much like shit. I don't know, tired, old, and I had to give the boys a bath this morning, and I said whole bunch of stuff because our family woke up late this morning. And so I had to rush and get everything, take my other kid to preschool. And so I was feeling like shit. And I was like, God, I got to get out of this little funk I got. So I did what anyone would do that grew up in the 90s, 80s and 90s. I got a big, tall thermos of coffee, came up to my office, and started rocking the hardest gangster rap that I probably could find on YouTube. And I got my toe tapping a little bit, and the funk went away. And here I am. I said, hey, let's record this intro for a badass episode with Tony Peterson. It's another good one. Man, I don't even know what we talk about. We talk about deer hunting. We talk about, like, it's just random. There's no movie associated with this one. It's just a really good BS session conversation with Tony Peterson again. And that's really all I'm going to say. So hopefully my energy for this intro kind of fades into the energy of the podcast, and you guys enjoy this. Here's what I'm going to say. I really appreciate each and every one of you for taking time out of your day to listen to the Nine Finger Chronicles. If you haven't checked out the rest of the podcasts on the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, you need to do it, because They're really good. There's a lot of really good content coming out of the network. So go check that out. And thank you for listening. Thank you for following on social, Instagram, Facebook. Tell your friends about the Nine Finger Chronicles if they haven't already, or the Sportsman's Nation. We got the Hunting Gear Podcast. We got a whole bunch of other stuff, right? That's the one I do. Another one I do is the Hunting Gear Podcast. With all that said, I got to do some commercials real quick, and we're going to run through these. We're going to make it a little quicker this time, but I'm going to get back after the first of the year. I'm going to get back into some longer commercial sets just because I owe it to these companies who help support me. But HuntStand.com, go to HuntStand.com and read about all the functionality and all the robust features of that hunting app. And you can save 20% off by entering discount code SN20, SN20. Go to Lone Wolf. There's some news coming out of Lone Wolf that I'll be sharing with you later this year. But Lone Wolf discount code 9FC21, 9FC21, and that's 50% off all purchases over $200. Get yourself a set of sticks, and then make that an order. Save $50, and then go and buy a tree stand on a separate purchase, and then save another $50. So technically, you're saving $100 by purchasing those, and that's a win right there. I don't know if they want me to tell you that or not, but either way. And then Wasp broadheads, hands down, one of my favorite brands. And you know why? Number one, it's made in America, just like Lone Wolf. But at the same time, it is a piece of absolute destruction when they hit, whether it's a Boss 4-blade fixed blade or it's a jackhammer mechanical. Dude, they do some serious damage, and they kill shit. So wasparchery.com, 20% off. Nine fingers, the number nine followed by the word fingers, 2021. And then Ozonix, the discount code, go to the Ozonix website. First off, read about ozone if you haven't used ozone before, and how Ozonix can help eliminate your scent, distort your scent profile, and give you more of an advantage in the woods. And that is NFC21, and that's going to get you a free dry wash bag with a purchase of one of their units. And then also vortexoptics.com, dude, a badass brand doing badass things, and they have badass equipment, right? Rifle scopes, spotting scopes, binoculars, range finders, tons of new products coming everywhere between January and April. So more information to come on that. Exodus Trail Cameras, love that brand. ExodusOutdoorGear.com. These guys put out a badass trail camera that works. That works, period. So I like that. And then if you're looking for a crossbow, we're running into that time of year where we're going to start thinking about gifts for maybe a young hunter or a new hunter. And there's no better way to get someone out in the woods if they're not maybe they're a little gun shy. Maybe get them a crossbow. Go to ExcaliburCrossbow.com. Check out all of the different crossbows that they offer. They have a new, if you're more of an advanced hunter, they have something called a Twin Strike and two loaded bolts in one crossbow. So it's that's crazy. It's badass. So huge shout out to all the brands that support the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Sportsman's Nation. Thank you very much. Follow social, blah, 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 blah. Let's get into today's episode with Tony Peterson. 3, 2, 1. Mr. Tony Peterson, how the hell are you, man?
I'm doing great, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. Like I mentioned before we started recording, it's been one of those weeks where November marks the end of the business year for me. So my fiscal year over here runs December through November. And it's just that it's all of the not fun parts of owning your own business right now.
Yeah. You mean you don't just spend all of your days talking about deer hunting?
Dude, you know, that's the thing. Like, I still do a lot of that, but there's adult time too, where you're just like, okay, if I want to be successful, I have to check these boxes off either every day or once a month, or this time it's a once a year thing, but it's just a lot of hours. And it is, it's not stressful. The only reason it's stressful is because I put it on myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So. The administrative stuff that comes with running your own show sucks.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. Especially, you know, if you're really not wired for it, it's just a grind. I do the same thing. I have to just carve out days where I'm like, this is a, I'm not writing anything today. I'm not, what I'm doing is just office work.
Yeah.
And they're my least favorite days.
Yeah. I feel you. I wish I had in my office here another little desk for a lady named Barb. I'm guessing late 50s, you know, that typical office manager secretary role that just, she's really nice and kind, but she does all the shit that I don't want to do.
Yeah. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, dude, I have a pretty big announcement to make on this episode.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is, it's life changing.
Wow.
Yeah. It's big time. I think I'll just say it here. I did a little teaser on social media, but, early in 2022, I am going to get a vasectomy.
You know what? Me too.
You haven't had one yet?
Nope.
Oh, dude, come down here and maybe we'll have a 2-for-1 deal.
I thought I gave myself a vasectomy on a barbed wire fence in Oklahoma in 2015. And so far it's been holding up. I'm not a doctor, but I think I rendered my apple bag totally useless.
Yeah.
But just in case, I told my wife that the other day. I'm like, I think it's time to get serious about this.
Yeah.
So yeah. maybe we'll be sore beanbag buddies together.
Hey man, I'm gonna schedule it probably right before shed season, and get that taken care of. I know, like, I thought I had a strong pullout game. My pullout game is not strong. And I have a third child to prove that. And also, like, and just being adults here, we're all adults. Condoms suck. And I'm ready to get past that, this whole part of my life.
Yeah. So, yeah. The reproductive phase of your life is over.
It's over. Right. There is literally no need for any type of Dan Johnson bloodline anymore. Three's enough. There's no need for it.
I hear it, buddy.
Yeah.
I hear it.
So you mentioned a barbed wire fence there. I had a buddy during shotgun season, right? It was his younger brother's first time at deer camp, and it was really cold. And he told him, hey man, when it's real cold and you're wearing all these layers, tie a string to the end of your dong, and then you leave it outside of your pants. And then when you have to go, you just unzip, and then you use that string to jimmy it out, right? Oh my God. This kid got his dick caught, that string caught on a fence, and he was crossing it. And I don't think it caused any permanent damage, but it was serious enough to where they were concerned about it for a while. And I don't know. We can look back at it and laugh now is what I'm saying.
So this was a joke, right?
It was just a straight up joke that brothers play on brothers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should do a public service announcement here. Do not tie anything around your pecker ever.
Ever.
Not for fun. Not
no.
for a joke.
Nope.
Not to surprise your wife on Valentine's Day. Just don't do it. And really don't do it when you're going to go walk around in the outdoors.
Right.
With part of that string exposed.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Jesus.
It's just like, I'm getting the shivers just thinking about it.
Dude, I have, I know every guy is hypersensitive to that, but I absolutely wrecked my junk pile one time on a fence post.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, it makes me not feel very good to hear that story of that dude. I don't.
Yeah.
It's no bueno, man. Yeah.
My junk story was playing rugby, and, I don't know, for those of you who have ever played rugby, it's not plays, so it's continuous, like soccer is continuous.
Yep.
So if you get tackled, you have to kind of turn around, you place the ball, and your own teammates kind of bulldoze the other players off of you, and another player will pick the ball up and start playing it again. Well, I got tackled weird, and I placed the ball between my legs, and as my teammates came over top of me, they pretty much did a a peel out right on my nards. So I don't know if I've never told this story on the air, but now's the perfect time to tell it. So I go into the doctor the next day and they're like, okay, yeah, I mean, whatever. Let's, just keep an eye on it. The pain goes away. Okay. About 2 months later, the pain comes back and I'm talking full force. I look down instead of my normal junk down there. It's like swollen to the size of a softball overnight. And so I go to the emergency room and I'm laying there like that day, probably 13 people looked at my private parts. Okay. A doctor and about 12 nurses. And every one of them was poking it going, does that hurt? Does that, I'm like, God damn, it hurts. Stop touching it. So I'm laying there basically spread eagle on the, spread eagle in this waiting room in the emergency room. And my worst fears came true that day. Opens the door and here comes my grandma. She was the emergency contact on my insurance form because she, where I went to college and where she lived was close. So without me knowing, they called her and she comes into the room. Well, the doctor's not in there and she's like, are you okay? What happened? I go, it's just a rugby accident. It's going to be fine. Dear God, take my life now type of moment. Doctor comes in. And he goes, who are you? And she's like, well, I'm the emergency contact. And he hands her a pamphlet. I'm talking 4 inches thick of pamphlets about sexually transmitted diseases. So they just assumed that I had some kind of STD because I'm a 20-year-old college guy who, it's an STD. We got another one, get the pamphlets. Yep. Well, long story short, I had my vas deferens torn and it got infected. And so that's one of the problems that came from it. But that whole experience, there's not many guys out there who I know whose grandmas have actually seen their not just as a baby, but as a grown man, seen their genitalia.
Yeah, that's a hard pass, man.
Yeah, exactly. So whitetails. I love the transitions.
You nailed it.
Nailed it. Okay, whitetails. This is kind of a shoot from the hip type podcast. And I was in my tree stand this year and, it was the same night that I ended up shooting my Iowa buck. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, man, these bucks, cause I saw 3 bucks and the 4th buck that I saw that night was my, was the shooter that I ended up shooting. And I saw no does that night, but the does work their way around this, I guess you want to call it a ridge point. And then they follow the main ridge up to, the ag fields. And that's kind of their daily bed to feed pattern. And I was thinking, do these bucks know that these deer, I mean, are they capable of thinking like that? Like they're thinking and they're waiting for these deer at a certain point in their bed to food pattern. Cause I was always under the assumption that these deer would just go straight to them. It's not like they have the process to say, or the thought process to say, hey man, I'm just going to wait here. And I'm going to just scent check them as they come through. I've seen that a couple times throughout the years. And I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Man, I think they do. I mean, I think they're so tuned into that,
yeah,
that they, I think we assign a lot of randomness to that, especially kind of rut behavior. Right. And I don't think there's a whole lot of randomness to it.
Yeah.
I mean, you think if you lived on a square mile, if that was your home range, you would know everybody who lives there and everything they do.
Right.
I mean, if you had a nose that sensitive, and that was the entirety of your existence, or 95% of your existence, you would know those does go there then.
Yeah.
Like I firmly believe it.
Yeah. And when I used to hunt field edges back in the day, I can remember, from the opposite timber block, a group of does come out, a 2 or 3 year old comes out and just starts dogging them the whole night, pestering them the whole night. But the mature, the 4 year old or older, he doesn't even lift his head up the entire night. And he's just, he it's like he knows that if I want them, I can go and take them.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah. And it's just, everybody always says, hey, and I think you've mentioned this before. I know I've talked about it. There's sometimes we give them too much credit, but then we almost contradict ourselves when we start having conversations like this, where they're so in tune with their environment, but we have to treat them like dumb animals. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think when we give them too much credit, it's typically in relation to how we interact with them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think if you were just kind of objectively looking at what a deer's daily life is and what he knows and what he's capable of, it's kind of easier to set yourself apart from that and just go, yeah, it seems like he should know every inch of that place and be really tuned in. Where it gets muddy is when we're like, oh, I can't kill one, so what's going wrong?
Right.
Like he must be so good at surviving that, because I'm a really good hunter, so if I can't kill him, then he must have something going on that's just incredible.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of easy for us to default to that mode and give him too much credit that way. And I think it's a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. It's almost like we become too arrogant for the strategy.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about this just like yesterday. I can't remember where I heard it, but somebody was talking about how public land is just not worth hunting anymore. Yeah. And it wasn't like specific. It wasn't like public land in Colorado or the public land that I live by. It was just a blanket statement that public land hunting sucks and we shouldn't be doing it anymore because it's no good. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here, I'm going, like, you realize that's only half of the equation, because
right.
You're not saying what you're bringing to the table.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're not saying like, I put in tons of work, or I put in no work, or I'm a super lazy hunter and I just want it easy. Like, we have there's no basis for that. So
yeah.
When somebody says something like that, I'm kind of like, okay, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Like it's just like a kind of a politically charged statement that's going to rile people up, because some people are going to believe it because they want to, but it
yeah.
doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Those are the same people who will also say, oh man, hunting private's not like it used to be. You know, they come up with some dumb excuse why they haven't been successful. And so they want to blame it on how public land versus private land. Those are the same people, I feel, that always come up with an excuse of why they weren't successful. Meanwhile, me and you can show 1,000 examples of guys who go out and get it done really in any scenario.
Yep. Well, I mentioned to you off air that I'm spending a lot of time hunting pheasants right now on
yeah.
public land. And we have amazing hunts, man. I mean, they're not easy birds. You know, they get hunted a lot, but you can have a great hunt. And I always think about this. I'm like, you start with squirrels and move on up to elk. At least in my life, everything in between there, I've had so many fun, action-filled, sometimes successful, sometimes not, public land hunts.
Yeah.
And like you said, the scene that we're kind of plugged into, I mean, I could rattle off 50 people who have the same kind of experiences
yeah.
in so many different states and so many different places.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't know, this whole private versus public thing. It just, to me, all I see is pressure versus unpressure, you know,
yep.
like pressure. What is the pressure level on a particular piece of property? Obviously, if the pressure is intense, it's going to be a different way. You're going to have to hunt that deer population different than if it is a completely, you know, unpressured property. And that's how I go about it. Not necessarily, oh, this is public, it's gonna be hard, because there's public ground out there somewhere that is probably easier to hunt than some private.
Oh, totally. I mean, dude, one of the biggest kind of light bulb moments I had was, you know, I grew up hunting this dairy farm in southeastern Minnesota, and it gets piss pounded.
Yeah.
I love it. But it's a hard place to hunt, because there's a lot of people who hunt it.
Yeah.
And when I started really traveling to hunt public land, you know, I'd go out to North Dakota and I'd be like, this is like orders of magnitude easier than my private land at home, you know? And so it's so situational. And, you know, the other thing, you're totally spot on with the pressure. I mean, that's the difference maker, private, public, whatever. But there is one thing I would add to that, you know, if you have private land, generally you have more options to cut some shooting lanes and set up ahead of time
yeah.
and hopefully run cameras without getting them stolen. So like there's an advantage to it, but it's like, you know, it's not the greatest advantage that we often kind of portray it is.
Yeah.
You know, between private and public, it's, you know, sometimes it's pretty thin.
Yeah. And it's crazy. So in my office, I have my Iowa buck, like from an antler standpoint, 2, maybe even 3. Let's see. 2.5 of my South Dakota whitetail could fit in between my, my Iowa buck. But the only hunt that I'm thinking about right now is my South Dakota hunt and how bad I want to get back out there again.
Yep.
Right. So for me, it's just like, I don't know, man, people put the value on things that put the value on in the wrong spots these days. Like, yeah. I don't want to turn this, because this conversation easily gets turned into how fucked up the hunting community and the hunting industry is. But like all I'm thinking about right now is how do I get back out there and hunt more and more and more?
Yeah. Cause it's different.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we have really kind of gone against one of our basic, I don't know if you'd call it an instinct or what, but we love mystery.
Yeah.
Like humans love mystery. And, you know, if you have a good private whitetail spot that you can really keep track of, it's still really fun.
Yes.
You develop that hit list and everything. It's cool. But what you're doing is you're taking a lot of mystery out of it.
Yeah.
When, you know, when the odds are really high that a buck walks over the ridge and you look at him and you know him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still super exciting, but it's different than showing up someplace you have no history with and everything's new and everything's a mystery and you don't know what bucks are living in there and what it holds for you.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of thing and it's freaking fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just the fact of you're stepping onto a piece of ground and like you said, the mystery, but the strategy is like happens right now. It doesn't happen, you know, really in the truck. If you're going with the flow, as opposed to my whitetail hunt, I knew where I wanted to be. I knew that I had a certain wind. So it was just a matter of waiting until I hit that, you know, waiting till that afternoon and then going in. On those other hunts, whether it's a Western hunt or, a public land hunt or whatever, brand new property, you're making decisions instantly and you're having to make those decisions right now because it could affect what happens in the next 5 minutes or the next 5 hours.
Yep. So, well, and not only that, but when you talk about, you know, your Iowa hunting, oftentimes the best strategy is to not hunt.
Yeah.
And until it sets up right.
Yeah.
Which is a great way to kill big ones.
Yeah.
But then you're not hunting. And when you go live out of your truck or live out of a tent in a new state and you've got 4 days or 6 days, you're not making that decision.
Right.
You're not going to be like, you might take off a day or take off a half a day to glass or mostly scout, which is a good idea a lot of times.
Yeah.
But you're still in it. It's right. Not just like, I'm going to sandbag now because I can see the forecast for next week and I know they're coming by this stand.
Yeah.
Then it's a different thing.
Yeah. So you mentioned pheasant hunting, right? So you're out on public and you were pheasant hunting, but you were also bumping some good deer, it sounds like.
Oh man. The amount of deer I kick up on public land pheasant hunting is incredible.
Yeah. Why are those spots overlooked?
They're not overlooked.
They're not overlooked.
I'm telling you, man, especially this year, I don't know what the deal is, but I've seen more pop-up blinds on the public land that I hunt. Obviously left over from gun season, people didn't pull them for whatever reason. And, you know, the other side is that you got these box blinds that everybody builds on the fence lines now. And I know they're getting hunted hard. Like, yeah. I know those properties are, but when you look at where those deer are getting out of, they're coming out of little willow thickets, little alder thickets, and just advantageous spots in huge cattail sloughs.
Yeah.
And so if you don't walk in there and move them, I don't think those deer in the, you know, whatever, I think it's a 9-day gun season in that part of the state, you know, they got to lay down for 9 days during daylight and they win.
Yeah.
Unless you go step on them and then you're shooting at a running deer in the cattails, you know? Yeah. And so, which is a low odds deal, but I think it's just, I think a lot of people go out and they sit with a good view and they wait for one to walk across the CRP, but those deer, you know, I mean, when you know how it is when you hunt a pretty flat area, those deer are so clued in to where we're coming in from, and you know, you can't really sneak into most of those spots to set up. So you're walking, you're going to skyline yourself somehow.
Yeah.
And I just think we tip our hands so much, and those deer are like, oh, I know this movie. I know where to go where I'm safe. And we, you know, the reason we kick them up is I've got two dogs and we're in there with them. And it every single year I'll be sitting there and hear something get up and, you know, get ready thinking it's a rooster taking off. And I'll look within, you know, 15, 20 feet of me and a good buck will get up and, you know, bust. Usually they bust behind you at that point. And it's just incredible because they've sat there and sometimes you've shot. Sometimes you're working the dogs in on a dead bird. It's crazy what they put up with because they know I'm safe until it's absolutely critical that I got to go.
Yeah. So let's try to change that, or talk about this time of year then. Right. Cause I have to wait until this weekend is Iowa second season starts and then it goes for a whole week and then it's another weekend and then it's late. It would be, I guess, considered the late season time frame here in Iowa where I can get back out. You know, like I don't gun hunt. So I'm going to check trail cameras. I'm going to try to find something worth shooting here in Iowa. If I find something, then I'll go after it. If not, then whatever. Right. So like as far as what you just talked about in these, you know, these deer are deep in this thick, nasty place where people just don't want to go. How does in that ecosystem and in that environment, how does that then translate nationwide or throughout the Midwest? Like where should guys be looking if they haven't filled their tag yet? And they're just like, God, I got to get it done. I want to get it done. I'm ready to give it 100% now.
Man, at least using kind of what I see a lot in the late season and how I hunt, I'm a contrarian. It drives Kenyon nuts, but I tend to go against a lot of conventional advice.
Yeah.
And you know what the conventional late season advice is. Go sit on a food plot or go sit on a cut cornfield and wait, right? I mean, we've been fed that a long time, and it's a great strategy if you have that set up.
Yeah.
Like it absolutely is. But a lot of people don't, and I don't really. So what I like to do is I start the other way, and I go, where are they going to bed? Like, I'm not a big bed hunter, but this time of year, I want to know where they start from.
Right.
And I want to know that part of the equation because that's the one that matters to me because I'm probably not killing deer on a food source this time of year. And so you got to look at it and go, okay, I do kind of a reset moment this time of year. And I'm like, where are they right now? Where did the gun season push them into their little survival sanctuaries? And then, you know, when you find that, you get in there and you jump a buck or you jump a group of does and you're like, okay, I got something to work with, or you observe them. That's the other thing that's really big this time of year and go, okay, now I have something to work with. Now I know where they're probably going to go end up tomorrow morning and where they're going to start from. And so, you know, you can still factor in where's the food they're probably going to head to. But what I want to do is just get in between that. I want to get close to where they're going to bed and kill them when they walk past.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been my, you know, I'll be honest with you. I don't hunt a lot during late season. I don't know why, because I think a lot of it has to do with just time's up, it's time to start going back to being a dad and a husband again and things like that. The bridges have been burnt, so to speak. But now that I have access to a couple of farms closer to home, that's going to change things. And, you know, over the years, it's just been, hey, try to find that food source, try to find that ag field that they're hitting. But that just doesn't always work, man. Like and that's why, just like what you said, it's almost like I revert back to early season hunting, the method of getting in close because they're still nocturnal. And I'm not joking, man. It was almost like a switch. On this farm, I had two cell cams out and it was daywalkers, click, nocturnal. And I haven't had a lot of bucks go like daylight since December, I want to say. Well, it would be probably the last week in November, to be honest with you. as far as mature bucks are concerned. And from there, it's just been, so I know they're up on their feet somewhere. It's just a matter of having to go find them. Now, going and finding them. After the gun seasons are over, after we've had a damn near a whole season of pressure, do you think that scouting, like aggressive scouting and trying to locate maybe fresh trails or any type of fresh sign or bumping them out of a bedding area is good or too aggressive to where, shit, there's pressure here now, I've been pressured all year, I'm gone to the next property?
I think there's a lot of benefit to that. I mean, that's my go-to strategy.
Yeah.
I go try to find them.
Yeah.
And then I try to build a plan around it. And yeah, I mean, you're going to bump some deer, but the thing is, you know, I don't think they're going to, if you go bump a deer now, let's say you bump a deer 2 days after gun season ends, you just bump that deer probably from where it rode out the gun season.
Right.
Like you bumped it out of the place. It's like, this is my survival spot. Like that's a huge win.
Yeah.
You know, like that's to know that, or to get into some kind of really thick cover and find a trail that's pounded, you know, whether you got snow or not, if it's showing like real heavy usage, that's a huge win.
Yeah.
So it's worth the risk. Cause you know, they're not, I really don't believe, you know, this can happen on little properties, but I don't think they leave from our presence nearly as much as we think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and the gun season is a prime example. If you see all the deer that we jump out of these public land spots when we're pheasant hunting, you know, those deer should be gone. There's private around there.
Yeah.
Like there's better cover they could get to somewhere probably, but they don't leave.
Yeah.
And I just look at that and go, okay, they're just playing a better game than we are most of the time. So anything they show you matters, but it's pretty calculated, man. Like I really think, like you said, getting back to the early season stuff, I mean, you got to get back to some staging area stuff.
Yep.
And get closer to the beds, and you got to play the cover game hard.
Yep. 'Cause
in a lot of places for a lot of people, they're not going to see tons of daylight movement. And you really increase your odds if you get in where they're going to feel safest moving.
Yeah.
And you know how to play that game.
Yeah, for sure. What about how vegetation changes things, right? So in the early season and even into the fall, we have good edge created by vegetation. Now, vegetation is for the most part off of everything except those, I don't know, I forget the name of those bushes that hold green honeysuckle.
Multiflora rose?
Yeah, I think it's honeysuckle is what they call
okay.
it. And it's like, it stays green all year round. Basically, the leaves on it do. And it's real, it's like a real easy to break stem on it. It's like,
yep.
I don't know. Anyway, most of, unless we're talking about that, most of the vegetation has come off the trees and it creates almost like, obviously the timber's wide open now. It creates new edge someplace else, right? And
yep.
the deer are still using the same terrain features, but they're using them just a little bit differently. How do you adjust to that?
Well, I mean, that starts coming into play in mid-October. Because
yeah.
I really think those bucks that time of year, I think that's part of the reason people think the lull is such a big deal. I think it's those bucks reacting to the fact that they're, you know, a lot of their hidey holes are pretty open now.
Yeah.
And they're backing up into something better. But to me, it's just all about, you know, if I would hunt cottontail rabbits there, it's probably pretty interesting to the deer.
Yeah.
You know, and if you get into, you know, that's kind of ag land stuff, but even in the big woods, you know, where I hunt in northern Wisconsin, if you think about like, yeah, that gets way more open, but there's blocks of timber that have different year age clear cuts. And, you know, the right clear cut, if all the leaves fall off, is still a thick mess.
Yeah.
And so where is that stuff? You know, and in some places that's the cattails. In some places it's some kind of other thicket or some kind of clear cut, but there's always something like that. Usually, you know, you don't run into like a mono landscape very often where everything's all the same, that kind of pastured woods look. So there's usually something to work with.
Right. If I was going to write an article and someone goes, hey, Dan, I want you to write a late season hunting strategy article, you know, and you've seen them before. I feel like they pop up in the magazines and online. Well, they've already popped up. And yep. one of them is always like, deer are slaves to their stomach. Right. So that just tells us that, you know, this time of year after a rut, they're got to try to find the food to stay alive for the winter, all that stuff. Maybe answer this question in two parts. One, snow on the ground. Two, no snow on the ground. How do you feel like where deer are going? What do they bunch up a lot? Are they spread out? Like answer that question. If you're trying to tell me, hey, Dan, go out and try to find them, and this is where I would start looking.
Well, I mean, first I would address that deer are slaves to their stomach thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. They got to eat.
Yeah.
And we know they're all wore down and all that BS, but you're working with, you know, what, 10 and a half, 11 hours of daylight.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time they can feed anywhere they want, not worry about us messing with them for the most part. Like it's not, they're going to survive first. And they can live off their fat. Even if they're hungry, they can wait until dark to move.
Yeah.
And so they're making decisions. You know, and the problem here is you can turn on the Outdoor Channel and watch 50 deer pour into a cut cornfield and hear somebody say that and look at proof of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't know everything else is going on there. That's a highly managed place, most likely, yeah. And probably not what you're hunting.
And it's not picked cornfield. It's a cornfield that has been probably brush hogged. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So you can see that, and that reinforces that conventional advice. But for most people, that's just those deer are out there and they're going to live first. They know they're going to have enough time to feed overnight. They know there's going to be places to browse where they don't have to expose themselves. So I always just think about it like I'm paying attention to food, and there are food sources out there like red oak acorns will get left if you got a lot of white oaks to deal with. You'll see that turn on in December. I see that in southern Minnesota quite a bit, where they don't really mess with them when they've got better options all fall. Then you start getting some snow and some cold and some real winter set in, and then I'll see those deer key on that. But you also just see a lot of browsing. Like even when I hunt in places where there's a lot of egg, right? Like, you know, they're going to end up in a cornfield somewhere or something like that. When you see deer in the late season moving through the woods, and I've seen this hunting and photographing so much, they're finding things to browse.
Yeah.
And so they're still eating. They, you know, they're slaves to their stomach, but they're not doing necessarily what people are trying to convey with that statement. And, you know, it gets, you know, you mentioned snow, no snow. I mean, snow certainly provides some advantages. You know, I mean, you can pick up right where they're going. It's never easier to find where deer like to walk than when there's snow on the ground. But I don't see a lot of yarding up, like, you know, the traditional kind of up north yarding up until it's real, you know, until you get in. So in most bow seasons, at least in my experience, I don't see a ton of that. I do see concentrations of deer because the cover's more limited and because they're all trying to kind of use the best stuff for survival, but it doesn't feel like that traditional deer yarding situation until I get into, you know, kind of January type time frame.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if the weather's horrible, then they'll start to do that. But if it's a mild winter, then that makes for the worst shed hunting too, by the way, is when you have the mild winters and then there you don't find very many sheds, or you run into what happened, I don't know, it's been like 2 or 3 years where I walk in a field and I find like 11 sheds in 5 minutes, and you get a scenario like that, and those are always fun too. So man, I don't know, like late season, obviously it's not the rut, but you know, are you a believer of annual patterns, whether there is a food source there 1 year or it's not there? Do you think deer will go to a wintering ground versus a, you know, like they'll at least start out there? So if you see them there last year, there's a good chance they might be back this year.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that happens quite a bit. And I mean, I think that's one of the cool things about trail cameras now is they let you kind of build up some of that year to year stuff, you know, instead of just kind of using them to the bucks are here or not, or, you know, the inventory is here or not. You start to see some things, and it's so interesting. I mostly run cameras only in Minnesota and Wisconsin because I have private places to hunt.
Yeah.
And I see, you know, deer up in some places in Wisconsin just having these days or these evenings where they're just on fire, you know, not rut stuff, just, you know, some random late September day. And it'll be the same thing at home here in the cities or down south in southern Minnesota. And I'm going, what's going on? Why is this happening?
Yeah.
And then on some of those properties, you see some of that stuff happen from year to year. And you're like, I don't know why this is, but like mid-October is just on fire here. And so I just have to assume, like, I'm leaning toward believing more and more in that, yeah, even if I don't really understand why. And so, yeah, you would think late season would be a big chance for those annual, you know, movements or, yeah, patterns to emerge, because there's just more of a survival aspect to it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. So, you know, with that said, do you put any stock into that? Like going to a place and not having any real time information, just going back to a spot and said, hey, last year, late season, my trail camera showed that this area was on fire. Do you go back based off of, are you making any this year decisions based off last year, late season?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And what I do a lot of times is I get it wrong, but not like super wrong.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens, you know, I have some places, some public land pieces in different states that I like to hunt, and I go back to them, maybe not every year, but I go back where I could hunt on memories, and I almost always do hunt on memories to some extent. Like when, yeah, you get there, you're like, okay, this happened last time I was here. So, you know, you kind of talk yourself into like, yeah, this is going to happen again. And it almost never happens to me again, but I'm usually in the ballpark.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you're just like, I'm going to kill a buck out of this tree on this river crossing again, because it was on fire last year. And you set up there blind and you're waiting, and they all cross 300 yards upstream. Or right, instead of them being there in the morning, they come through in the evening from a different direction. Or yeah, there's just, you just see something and you're like, man, I was close, but I wasn't right.
Right.
And that happens to me all the time. Like I get close a lot, but I get it wrong a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So for a guy, and I'm going to use this as a scenario, you know, I got a lot of guys saying, hey, Dan, you know, next year I'm going to draw Iowa, or, hey, next year I'm going to draw this state, or next year, you know, I'm going to plan on going to Wisconsin or Missouri or whatever the state is. If someone has time now, is it worthwhile to come down during late season, let's say after all the gun seasons? I wouldn't recommend going scouting public or anywhere really during a gun season, but after, let's say after the gun season is over, but it's still in season, maybe that you might run into somebody else hunting, but is right now a good time to maybe start the scouting process?
I personally wouldn't. I'll weasel word this. The time that you get to spend walking around is valuable.
Right.
If you're going to go take a trip and you want to hunt some new state and you've got some ideas on, you know, this property or that property, yeah, it's valuable. But for me, when I look at that, I think the most valuable time frame for scouting like that is March. And I just maybe that's partially because I have nothing else to do, and so I do a lot of it then. But I like, you know, especially the back half of March for going and taking trips somewhere and just looking around, like, you know. And I think you might get a clearer picture of real usage from the last fall that way. If you went to some public land right now, you know, right after gun seasons go through, you might get kind of a skewed view, right? You're going to see more evidence of humans. The parking lots are going to be covered in tracks. You might just kind of get the wrong look, or, you know, the wrong perception of what's going on there. Yeah. And I just kind of like that March time frame you know, especially if the snow melts, where you can just go cover a ton of ground, you know, maybe find a few antlers or whatever, but you see what's going on there and whether it's worth hunting. And I make a lot of my travel decisions off of the miles I put on in March, whether some place is really going to, you know, really got my interest, or I'm just like, I don't know. This one doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I'm kind of that same way, except I'm also a protagonist, which means protagonist, antagonist. What's the one where you wait too long?
Procrastinator.
eighth grade education over here. Procrastinator. God, I mean, I'm a owner of a business and I don't even know that shit.
It's okay, buddy.
Yeah. Thanks for the reassurance. So I always say to myself, dude, I'm going to pound ground in March. I'm going to shed hunt. I'm going to scout. I'm going to do all these things. It typically doesn't happen, or the volume that I want it to happen doesn't. And then the next thing you know, it's May and it's just mosquito ridden vegetation everywhere. Can't see shit, you know, because everything's grown back and you're just like, oh, I hate myself. Just like, oh, like you got to get ready for the season. So as far as planning is concerned, whether it's, you know, what should a guy this time of year be planning for or thinking about for next season?
Well, I would say on that, on your very honest admission that you push this shit off and don't do it as much.
Yeah.
That's pretty relatable, man.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people love the idea of certain things, you know, sitting all day, going on a 10-day elk hunting trip, whatever, you know, going up to the Boundary Waters for a week. Like they love the idea, but the actual implementation of this stuff is tough because it's work. And so I would say, you know, figure out a way to motivate yourself to go do some of this, because if you want to be a better whitetail hunter, learning to love scouting and not kind of dread those times or not allow yourself to push them off is real important. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why I always talk about, you know, if you can't do that, or like, if you're just like totally honest, you're like, that's not my thing. But you still want to go deer hunt out of state, take a turkey hunting trip there. If you can get a tag, because man, that's a different kind of thing. You know, you're obviously not going to be as focused on the deer, but it's going to get your ass over there and you're going to do kind of a trial run with your camping and you're going to get to see the ground you might want to deer hunt and you're going to learn a lot. And it really, I don't know how many places, like good public land places I've found in my life through turkey hunting, but it's a lot. Yeah. And it also some that I've just knocked off the list where I'm like, I don't want to come here and deer hunt for some reason.
Yeah. I feel you. That's awesome, man. So now are you done for the year? I mean, what do you have left as far as deer hunting is concerned?
I got antlerless tags here in Minnesota. I got some antlerless tags across the river. And so that's kind of, my family, we've got six deer in the freezer.
Yeah.
And so I feel really good. My goal was seven this year, and cause we can eat that. But we're sitting on six and it feels really good. So I'm mostly just looking at to get out, cause I kind of just want to before the season ends. You know, I'll shoot a doe if one gives me a really good shot and I feel it. Like I'm like, I would love to butcher one tonight or tomorrow morning. Yeah. And this deer is 15 yards away broadside, no fawns, and it's perfect, but I probably won't kill another one, but I will hunt.
Yeah. I feel you. Like for me, my freezer's full, right? Well, to be honest with you, I have one whole deer still at the processor that I have to, like, we're eating venison almost every meal now, just so I can make room to go down and get my other, the deer that my Iowa buck, it's done at the processor. So I got to, you know, do that in. But then I'm thinking to myself, man, I want to go try to do this late season thing this year. If I locate a good buck, I want to go try and shoot him. But what will I do? Like, I'd have to give it to a family member to hold into, you know, holding their deep freeze, which long story short is leading me to believe I need to buy a bigger deep freeze.
Well, that's what I did a few years ago for that very reason.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like a failure if I run out of venison.
Yeah.
I want to ride that right to the end until the new opening day is coming. And I'm just like, okay, I've got enough to last me till whenever I get my first one.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason I went and bought I did that too. Cause I'm like, I don't want to be limited with freezer space.
Yeah. So I think I just got to bite the bullet and go do it. Maybe that will be my next purchase after my vasectomy. Bringing it back full circle here.
And coincidentally, you can buy that bag of peds you're going to have to keep on your nuts when you're recovering.
Bingo. Or just use venison, dethawed on my on my nards, and then eat it later that night.
I think don't serve that to your guests.
Yeah. Well, just close family, right?
Yeah.
Close family. Other than that, man, like, anything else we need to talk about today? I want to apologize to our, if you thought we were going to talk about some 90s movie, I'd kind of dropped the ball on that. We had a couple of good ideas brewing, but the time came to record the podcast, and I had poor planning on my part.
Yeah, well, it happens, man. Yeah. We'll get back on that movie train here somewhere in the near future.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I just think, I think that a lot of people kind of give up this time of year.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one thing I would say is, you know, if you're kind of primarily hunting for bucks or good bucks for much of your season, and, you know, you're still sitting on a buck tag or you've just got a doe tag left, this is a fun time to lower your standards and just hunt deer.
Absolutely. Like,
and that's one of the reasons I go. I mean, it's one of the reasons I love the fact that most of the places I hunt, I can get doe tags, because I know, you know, I don't know what it was like for you growing up, but when I started hunting in Minnesota, I mean, you'd get a tag, and, you know, I think it was good for a buck or a doe back then, but you're like, if you fill that sucker, you're just done. And, you know, you might kill one on opening day and be like, well, now I got 90 days of season left and I am done. You know, that was before we even considered traveling out of state or anything. Yeah. And it's kind of a gift in a lot of places now to, you know, you can be licensed up and still hunt through the end. And this is a time when it's really difficult to kill a deer, but you'll find out kind of what you're made out of, you know, like you'll find out, like, are you really on your A game as far as your setups and, you know, like knowing when to draw and all of that stuff. Like this time period exposes a lot of holes in your game.
Yeah.
And I love that. I mean, I spent quite a bit of time last December hunting, and I never shot a deer, and I probably sat at least 8 or 10 times in December just hunting a doe.
Yeah.
And I never even got a shot, and I had deer within shooting range a lot. And it was like, it was so fun to me because I just kept getting my ass kicked. I'm like, this should not be this hard, but it was just just one of those times where you're like, man, it kind of makes me realize, like, I got a long ways to go yet before I have this stuff mastered.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you make a great point of like figuring out if you got it or not. And I was thinking about this the other day. I had a buddy who in our late 20s, we used to hunt a lot. And then in our early 30s, we went through where I just kept going. I was like, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. And he was like, dude, I'm just not that guy. And and what I mean by that is we all have different levels, right? Like I want to be that guy who goes out and hunts as much as possible and slays and just, you know, whatever your goal is, just that real aggressive. And I think there's other people who may have to have conversations with themselves. They want to hunt like they're that kind of person, but they don't put in the effort to be that kind of person. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, if you want to go out and just be that weekend warrior, cool, man, be that weekend warrior. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, I feel that society, man, is putting pressure on people to go be these slayers. And really, man, you're not a slayer. It's okay to admit that. Like, just, you don't need to be that.
Yeah. Well, there's only so many Andy Mays out there.
Right. Right.
They're pretty rare. And I totally agree. And I mean, this is the, this is the big gripe with the social media influencers and stuff right now, you know, is just pushing that message that it's just Terminator style hunting out there and always successful. And man, it's just so not reality. Yeah. And it's never been reality. I mean, you know, people bitch about that now, but they were bitching about that with magazines and with, you know, traditional outdoor television. It's always happened. It's just that's the new platform to go after. But the reality is yeah, it's just like, okay, well, if you're not that hardcore, that's fine.
Yeah.
But still go. Like if you like it, even if you think it's not going to be very productive, it's always worth going. Like it's always worth going. I always think about that. I talk about this a lot, but you know, we fish, me and my little girls, we fish smallmouth a lot throughout the summer. And you know, to beat the recreational boat traffic and stuff, we're getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. So we get that first couple hours of sunrise where, you know, usually the top water bites on fire and you don't have a bunch of idiots on jet skis. Yeah. And, you know, all summer long, I'm like, why am I waking up this early? But it's, I never, once I get out there on the water, I never regret it.
It's worth it.
You know, when the alarm goes off, you're like, this sucks. I don't want to go. And then you get out there and it's the same thing with deer hunting and turkey hunting and everything else. Like, yeah, it's work, but it's always worth it.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Well, we're going to close it down here. Not hunting related, but do you have any type of life advice for anybody? Are you qualified? Maybe are you qualified to give life advice? And if you do have life advice, what kind of life advice would you like to give a listener today?
Man. One of the things I'm like hyper aware of at this stage of my life is just like attitude.
Yeah.
You mentioned your buddy who's just like, I'm just not that guy. I'm just not going to go.
Yeah.
Like that's great. But one thing that I see it in the hunting space. I see it with, you know, my wife and I are coaching our little girls in basketball. Like, so I'm exposed to a lot of parents and I just see people who are not happy. And it's their attitude sucks.
Yeah.
And man, you know, I've talked about this a billion times with hunting. And, you know, if you have a bad attitude and you think you're going to fail, you're going to. And it's that's not just endemic to hunting. Like when I see people who are just, they're just looking for the negative constantly.
Yeah.
Man, it's such a drag.
And it's drain, dude. Like energy.
It absolutely is. And, you know, and I've been there, man. I get it. You know, like back when I drank a ton, like before I quit, I'm like, I totally get it. But so much of what we, you know, kind of blame others for or blame society for, like, man, your happiness is on you.
Yeah.
Like there's nobody else is going to make you happy. We've been led to believe we can buy something or marry someone and all of a sudden it's just roses and unicorn farts and shit like that. And it's not like you're in control of it.
Yeah.
And you got to make the right decisions and figure that stuff out. I mean, that's some of the reasons, or, you know, it's one of the reasons why a guy like you decides I'm going to start my own business or I'm going to run my own business and I'm going to hunt like a fiend.
Yeah.
You know, inherently, you know, those two things are going to add to your quality of life and they're going to be a bitch, but they're going to make you feel better overall.
Yeah.
And I think everybody needs to find that stuff and work on it because it's so important.
Yeah. And my advice to people is this, whether you are married, whether you are in a pre-marriage relationship or hell, even a post-marriage relationship, whether that's with a woman or a gender of your choosing. I don't know how to say that these days. Anyway,
yeah, don't get yourself canceled.
Exactly. I'm already canceled, dude. They can't cancel me. They can't cancel someone who's been canceled. So is this, take the L. Take the loss and just walk away. If you are in an argument, and I'm going to just speak directly to all of you men who think you guys have to have the last word, take the fucking L and leave the room and walk away and go do something different. It is better. You may feel like, oh, geez, I just, you know, I gave it away at the end there. I could have had it, but, you know, because I used to ride it and be like, hey man, technically that's what my wife hates when I go, actual technically or statistically that's impossible, you know, because we don't think the same, anything like that. So what I've learned is take the L, walk away, and in the long run, in both short and long, it will be better for you.
Yeah, that's good advice, because winning is not that important.
No.
Winning a little shitty argument, you know, with your wife or some asshole online, not that important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't fight with people online. I don't do that.
No.
I don't do any of that shit. Now, there are times, though, you got to stand up for yourself, but that's a whole nother podcast, and maybe we'll talk about, we'll give some advice on the next episode as well.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, I tell you what, Tony, man, really appreciate you hopping on again. I thank you for your time. And if you do get out there, whether it's in pheasant hunting or behind the bow or the gun, good luck, man.
Awesome. Thanks, buddy.
And there you have it. Another episode in the books. Shout out to Tony. He's been on a lot lately. I really appreciate his time coming on the podcast and BSing with us. Huge shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. We got Hunt Stand, Lone Wolf, Wasp, Ozonics, Vortex, Exodus, and Excalibur. Please go out and support these brands. And I mean it. Use the discount codes. That's how they track this stuff. So take advantage of that. Other than that, guys, be safe out there. There's still time in the season to go out and get it done, depending on where you live. Be safe. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Wear your safety harness, and we'll talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.